Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we discuss Danny Willett's resurgence and have a chat with the newest PGA Tour winner, Sebastian Munoz.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined by Sam Wyman, Keeley Levins in studio. Sam and I are wearing the exact same outfit.
So pretty, cute.
Not, I mean, not the exact same because it's different brands, like, but it's so pretty
I think
crazy.
Mine is more teal. No, yours is more teal. What? Mine is more.
Mine's more teal. Mine's a little
more
summery.
Mint.
Yours is more.
Yeah.
It's green.
Ocean green, I would say.
Ocean green.
Tranquil. Summer breeze, maybe.
The khakis, like a blue belt. Literally the same Pumas.
Blue Pumas.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Let's just say that my sizing's a little smaller.
I mean, I think we're wearing the same sizing.
Yeah.
Now, well, should I be is a different question. But.
That heavy breathing is Alex sucking in his gut.
Anyway, a lot to discuss. Obviously, we will start with the BMW PGA Championship on the European Tour, which got a nice boost because of the move in schedule to September. They got beautiful weather. Well, the final round, there was a little rain, but pretty nice weather. A much better field, I think, than normal. You had more Americans going over there than normal. And they had a hometown guy win, Danny Willett, the Englishman. And, you know, it's a crazy story. It's not his first win back since falling off the map. He did win the DP World Championship last year, which was, you know, an incredible comeback for a guy who'd fallen as low as 462 in the world. But now he's back up to 31 in the world. This is the European Tour's flagship event. Of course, he won the Masters in 2016, so it's not the biggest win of his career. But in some ways, Sam, from a mental aspect, as he always comes to you, I mean, what he overcame to get back in the winner's circle is almost more impressive.
And I would say incredibly impressive the way he sort of resolved to get his game back on track and said, "I'll, you know, whatever it takes." And I admire that. You have to remember that Danny Willett was this sort of up-and-coming player and certainly a guy people had targeted as a future contender. I think he sort of like skipped a step
right
when he won the Masters. And for a variety of reasons, which I don't proclaim to know what happened, but for a variety of reasons, he just everything fell apart almost, you know, soon after winning that Masters. And you know, you hear stories time and again of guys losing their games and becoming kind of a cautionary tale. And I really admire the fact that he, I don't know what the exact quote is, but he said something like, "I didn't care whatever it took, but I needed to get back to a better place." And if it took, meaning like, you know, guys look for quick fixes, you know, if it took me 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, he was willing to do it. And here he is. Those are two impressive wins. And certainly this win is the second biggest of his career.
Right. He made six birdies in the final round, but everybody was talking about the bogey he made. You know, he had a wild shot, then a punch out that didn't get back out there, and eventually got on the green. He made a 40-footer for bogey. He was about to lose the lead. You know, I mean, how obviously how big is that, Keeley, when you're in the midst of a tournament round to kind of have something? He even admitted, you know, that it was a little lucky. I mean, to make a 40-footer. I mean, it was just great
winners,
timing. Yeah,
winners get lucky.
Exactly. That's, and he said that too, right?
Yeah, and I liked a lot of the things that he was saying this weekend, including that, like, the guys that win aren't the guys that hit only perfect shots.
Right.
It's that when these moments where a double, even a triple, could easily end up on your scorecard, they turn them into bogeys or even pars. And I think that that's, like, it shows a real understanding and like a type of maturity, I think, in thinking that he may not have had went back when he won the Masters. Mm-hmm. So I think like that coupled with what Sam was talking about too, I think he's in just like a really healthy place mentally, and it's really impressive to see.
I think you should go to Keeley on the mental questions. That was a much
maybe I should go. Yeah, maybe I'll start doing that now from now on. Well, speaking of people doubting him, I mean, his own brother had an incredible.
There's a lot we could talk about.
Yeah, his own brother PJ, who obviously is infamous for the 2016 Ryder Cup when he kind of stirred up the American crowds and even the American team into a bit of a frenzy, and his brother had a bad week, and you know it was tough. Anyway, his brother PJ was back at it. He was planning on maybe going to the final round. He had to bring his kids. to see Danny, who had the lead. And he basically tweets that, nah, he's not going to win. John Rahm's going to beat him.
Savage.
And then he live tweets as it goes on. And finally, by the end, he's like, all right, maybe I should have gone. But I just love his own brother kind of getting on him.
I don't know if Danny Willett's parents are still alive, and I don't mean to make light of it, but as a father of two boys, I would be like admonishing, like why can't you just be supportive of your brother this one time? He's had a slump. You know, you ruined his Ryder Cup.
Right, you already ruined his Ryder Cup, his big week. Yeah,
remember
PJ.
All of his like tweets when Danny was like winning.
Oh yeah,
Masters.
Yeah,
like, that was some of the greatest Twitter performance that I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and then this was—I mean, this was pretty funny, but not quite as funny.
Not quite as funny, but pretty good. Danny, he wrote at one point when his brother still had the lead with just a few holes to left. Danny has an outside chance of winning this.
It's horrible.
I love that.
Absolutely horrible.
Then he goes, I should have taken the kids to Wentworth. And then on 18th hole, he's saying, just lay up. He's like trying to like coach him to the win.
Take out the 7-iron. Just bunt
fantastic.
It.
Fantastic. I will say about Danny, the one negative, I don't know if you got what you guys thought of his rain gear. He looked ridiculous. I mean, he looked absolutely ridiculous.
Okay, I'm sorry. Sitting across the table from the two of you in matching outfits.
We're looking good. We look good.
We're wearing the same outfit for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
We look fantastic.
He's wearing these black and white kind of rain suit where the whole leg, the calf is all white and the rest of it's black. It looked terrible.
I don't think that any part of any rain gear should be white, just as like a general rule. That would have solved a lot of problems.
Take that. Anyway, he looked terrible, but he obviously won. And I love Danny. I always mention that he did win me that Masters bet. 66 to 1 on $10. My man, Danny Willett. So good to see him back rolling again. Another guy had a huge win and the breakthrough win of his career, Sebastian Munoz, 26-year-old from Colombia. This is incredibly, for the first time ever, two players from Latin America win on back-to-back weeks on the PGA Tour. Of course, last week, Joaquin Niemann, Keeley, one of your faves, from Chile won. And now we have Sebastian Munoz from Colombia. And did it in dramatic fashion. Fell behind, you know, kind of lost the lead with butchered an easy par four. And then he birdies a 486-yard hole to get into a playoff and wins against Sung Jae-im, the reigning rookie of the year. Mm-hmm. Pretty impressive, Sam.
Yeah, no, completely impressive. And, you know, part of the storyline was how he felt emboldened by Niemann winning the week prior. Mm-hmm. And, you know, time will tell whether this is an ongoing trend or this is kind of a two-week sort of high point for, you know, Latin American golfers. But, you know, one of the things that we certainly talked about, you know, with the advent of the PGA Tour Latino America and obviously the Olympics, is that, you know, golf is starting to take hold in these, you know, non-traditional golf markets. And, you know, it's going to take time. You know, and the question I would ask is, are we starting to really see that to sort of manifest itself in a big way? Because it certainly seems like it's getting somewhere.
Yeah, without a doubt. And his quote was, Joaquin winning last week was kind of the last piece of the puzzle I needed to know that we're good enough, we're able to compete. That we're here, we're PGA Tour members, and we play to win. So,
great
attitude. And again, to hang in there, birdie the last hole when it looked like he'd kind of let it get away, because he also, a couple years back, this is his second stint on the tour. He barely kept his card. He was 124th on the final FedEx Cup standings last year. In his rookie year, he had a chance to win at the Greenbrier. He opened with a 61. He ended up finishing third. But so, you know, you come up and you have those chances right away. You still don't know if you're going to get him again.
Right.
And you know, now to win. Now he's in the Masters and he's got the two-year exemption. And it's really like a three-year exemption when you win this early in the season. It's pretty, you know, it's great timing. And of course, he got the Rooster Trophy.
Oh, my gosh. The best trophy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the best trophy in golf. Gonzalo Fernandez Castano had quite a tweet about it. Well, I'm not going to say it because of the kids. The kids might be listening. But if you're out there, check out his Twitter feed. I don't know where that came from, but pretty bold. But, Sam, it's an impressive run. He was playing alongside Carlos Ortiz in the final group. So that's what makes it even crazier. And Carlos finished fourth. He's the guy who, of course, won three Korn Ferry / Web.com Tour events in the same season a few years ago. He hasn't quite taken the next leap, but he's a solid player. He's kept his card. And I want to mention Brad Strachey, who is the head coach of North Texas men's program. He has these two guys, Munoz and Ortiz, went there, and he's the coach of Kyle Berkshire.
Amazing.
World Long Drive. And he, who overlapped with these guys for a year before he convinced him to get into World Long Drive, and now he's obviously the World Long Drive champion.
Your story about Berkshire, basically, he said, like, you shouldn't be playing college golf anymore, right? Am I right in saying
that? Yeah, well, he noticed, he redshirted as a freshman, so he obviously wasn't amazing. And again, this was a very talented team. Now we're talking about two guys who are PGA Tour level, winner level players. And the coach, who had a little, some sort of tie with World Long Drive, recognized Kyle's freakish speed. Basically was like, you're not even trying to train like these guys, and you're already swinging as hard as them. So maybe you should try this. And at first Kyle was like, yeah, I'll try it for a year, see what happens, and go back to, but now he's so good at it. He's not going back. But anyway, great job by Brad unearthing some of these gems out there, and them doing so well. All right, let's move on. Keely, I want to talk about Nelly Korda, because following a week where we talked about last week how she was one of the lone bright spots, well, her and Jessica, her sister, obviously, for Team USA in that loss at the Solheim Cup. She went 3-0-1. She goes out there, the French Ladies Open, and wins by 8 shots. So pretty, I mean, 21, she's ranked 10th in the world. She's here to stay.
She's unbelievable. I mean, I was honestly kind of surprised to see that she was even playing. Like, the Solheim Cup week is exhausting, and she was a rookie too. So I think, like, rookies spend even more emotional energy than everyone else. And to come out and win, and not only win, but by 8 shots, is just, I mean, her game is in unbelievable shape right now. And it's really cool to see, because I feel like we've been talking for the last couple of years about, like, who's going to be the next, like, great American golfer, female golfer, obviously. And there's, I feel like there's so many who are all kind of on the same tier, like Lexi and Nelly and her sister. And it's just like, who's going to kind of be able to pop up above everyone else? And watching Nelly, it's just like, why not? You know, she's so young. In the next, like, 2 years, like, could she be number one in the world? Like, she's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that comes down to temperament. Like, you know, it's like, once you get to that level, do you have the focus and sort of appetite to devote yourself to staying at a certain level? Because I feel like that's the hard part. Like, even on the men's side, right, we constantly see these players who have these moments like, oh my God, there's this person's going to dominate the PGA Tour. And A, because it's super competitive, it's hard for anyone to really stand out. But B, you have to be of a certain mindset. You know, when we talked about Rory McIlroy, and, you know, what's the one thing holding him back is that for some reason Rory isn't always, you know, kind of mean enough. It doesn't have the killer instinct enough to sustain that level on a regular basis like Tiger did. So I don't know enough about Nelly, about whether she has that or not. Because
I think she does. There was a random press conference a while ago where she said that her parents, who are both professional tennis players, call her the lion, and it could just with this, like, singular focus and, like, determination, and this, like, quiet, you know, just aggressive competitiveness. And I'm like, okay, well, if her parents are calling her that, they probably have a pretty good read on what it's like to be and, like, what you need to be like to be the best in the world. So I'm really curious to see where she goes.
Well, you mentioned Rory McIlroy, and I want to bring him up because he finished another backdoor top 10 at BMW PGA, which he has become quickly the best in the world doing.
Really good.
Not to knock him. He's the PGA Tour Player of the Year. But he will be competing along with Tiger Woods, Hideki Matsuyama, and Jason Day in the Challenge Japan Skins, which we're really excited about because, obviously, Golf TV, this is a Golf TV vehicle. We are now
part of the family
at Discovery
Golf. 80%
of
the proceeds go directly into your bank account. I believe that's the
Now I'm really excited. Yeah.
Everyone who's wearing teal gingham gets that.
But anyway, this is, you know, it's fun because we were talking about this last year. I remember I did something. It had been 10 years since the Skins game went away. And, you know, it was one of those things where people maybe got a little tired of. And, you know, you weren't getting the star players, the marquee players to show up over Thanksgiving weekend. This isn't going to be Thanksgiving weekend. It's going to be October 21st. It's going to be ahead of the inaugural Zozo Championship on the PGA Tour, which Tiger Woods committed to already many months ago. But, you know, there is kind of this void of there is no skins game anymore.
Right.
And mm-hmm. this won't be, you know, exactly the same format, but it's right. pretty much going to be a skins game, and there's going to be some other stuff to look forward to, some interesting challenges.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there was the match last year over right. Thanksgiving weekend, which was a ton of anticipation,
yes.
and I think we can agree that it was good, it was entertaining, but it left a little to be desired.
That sure.
just, you know, it didn't really take advantage of the format or the sort
sure.
of informal nature that it could have. And I feel like, again, I'm as a good company man, I'm giving you reasons why this is really good, but I really do believe this,
yeah.
which is that, you know, we're now able to sort of learn from what went really well there, what people are drawn to, and kind of what didn't work. I think four men just allows for more by play
yep.
as well, for sure. So that's a big part of it. And you know, again, this is a truly global event. We're talking about four different continents are being represented. So it's I think it'll be really cool. And let's just talk about Tiger for a second. You know, we haven't really seen him
yep.
play for a while, and I feel like I think he ended the season feeling like he still had a little more to give. Whereas mm-hmm. last year he probably he sort of left it all out in the field. And this year I feel like he wants to play some competitive golf. And this is, you know, certainly not an official capacity of
right.
competitive golf, but it's certainly competitive against three very, very high-level players. So.
Well, and it's going to be interesting because obviously he just underwent the knee surgery, mm-hmm. the arthroscopic knee surgery. But all along he was planning to play the Zozo and, mm-hmm. and obviously play in this. We knew about this, but it just kind of got officially announced. And you know, we keep talking about him maybe picking himself for the team. I mean, this is going to be a big event for him to even show that he
yeah.
is... See what kind of shape he's in. Yeah.
Yeah, see what kind of shape he's in, where his game's at. That whole week, obviously, this event will be on Monday in Japan, and then Thursday through Sunday will be the Zozo Championship. I love saying that. So and we'll get to see Tiger. And again, yeah, Sam, you're right. I think you're right with the four guys. It might be a little... Mm-hmm. to be a little more banter, hopefully. And I think there's definitely going to be more banter because we don't know for sure yet. We've all had discussions on this, but there will be certain holes with different challenges.
Right.
Is there something, Kelia, you would like to see, a little challenge?
Oh,
like, we've talked about, like, a one-club challenge or playing left-handed challenge. Just something to kind of mix it up. And, again, it's going to get those guys
challenge.
A speed challenge. Yeah, that'd be – we'd
with
all like to see that,
these
right?
days.
Yeah.
You know what I like to do is I always play is like you're standing on a tee box and you're waiting and then you like kind of look at another green.
Right.
And you're like,
oh, the cross country challenge.
Yeah. Cross country challenge.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, like
yeah.
something like that. Like they should
I don't know how, it's quite a name. Accordia Golf Narashino Country Club
well
in
done.
Chiba, Japan.
I don't know if that's right, but that was well done.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what Joel wrote. So,
no,
I mean,
it's probably wrong.
It's 50%, but it's wrong. He's in
Hawaii,
so
like
we can make fun of him.
Right yeah,
he's in Hawaii yucking it up, so we can take
well,
shots.
Well, that's funny. We had another colleague rejoin the company. We're very happy.
Yes,
Ben Walton.
Yes.
And Ben's like, where's Joel? I said, Joel is not only not here, he left the continental United
yes.
States to not be with you.
They're a little bit of adversaries.
Yeah.
So
quite the rival.
Good timing by Joel. All right, so anyway, October 21st is the Challenge Japan Skins. So look for that. That's going to be fun.
I'm really excited to see Rory play Skins.
Yeah.
I think his game is going to be impossible to beat, right?
I agree. It's like he's one of those guys that he just has these, you know, he's not of course, it's ridiculous to say four-time major champion. Obviously, his game translates
he's
to everything.
Good.
Yeah.
But is...
We've already knocked Rory twice. He won PGA Tour player.
That's
like killing him for backdoor
top
10.
My point is there, you know, he is the player of those four, and certainly compared to Tiger at the height of his career. Tiger was like the great, you know, the greatest grinder ever.
Yeah.
Like just built around, sustained around, had these moments. But, you know, Rory is the most susceptible to a big number once in a while.
Right.
In a big setting, mm-hmm. whereas you can have a big number in this, and
it
just
doesn't matter. But as you know, with skins, as we both all know, and I don't really like skins usually because it comes down. You could be the guy who pars like seven in a row,
totally,
and then you some you know
two tie all tie baby. I love
yeah,
it.
Exactly two tie all tie. And then you know the 25 handicapper makes a par and he wins all the skins, and then the rest of the round is like shot. Like someone won like a 10 skin hole or something. It can anyway. Let's but it should be. it should be fun. And that is a great field. Again, we're talking about when the Skins game kind of, you know, petered out there at the end. They weren't getting four world class stars like this. So that should be fun. All right, Sam, I wanted to talk. You had a nice thing. You know, it was spurred by a little banter in the office that one day.
No, it was spurred at directing insults directly at me.
Well, right, so. Right.
Yeah, you that's took office
it.
Banter.
Right, but then, it also. It was, anyway, whatever. We kind of joked about how working at Golf Digest is a little different setting than other places where golf is so prevalent.
Right.
That you take it from there.
Well, you know, the idea, of course, is that. In a workplace setting, there are insults that you can lob at someone that people would take personally and feel offended by, and you know, conceivably complain to HR about. Whereas golf, and not to make light of those,
yeah, of
but,
course.
By no means. But where golf is so specific, like you could do something that if you were not a golfer or didn't understand golf, and you say some of these things to people, it would seem completely innocuous, or you wouldn't even understand it.
Right.
Whereas here, yeah. It's so personal.
How
and
dare
so,
you?
Right. Yeah. Like everyone, and again, like people make fun of like this occasionally, not anymore because my stroke is so pure right now.
Oh,
but
Jesus.
Occasionally, decel on my putting stroke.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's like that hurts me. That wounds me. Whereas, so imagine going to an HR department, like, so what's the problem? I said, they say I kind of have a decel putting stroke. Like, you know, they don't even know what
right.
that
like,
means.
Okay.
So it was kind of breaking down what right. those golf-specific right. insults that you would complain
right.
about.
And
so.
You start off by talking about how the phrase Sammy Scoops is coming to play because there's one bit slow-mo video of you kind of cupping the wrist at the bottom, trying to
slip
it.
The amazing thing
it.
About that is that swing. I was so proud of that swing.
That's yeah. why it was so good.
And then we were like, wait, I mean, yeah. people were just piling on you.
Yeah, so it was like
dragging you.
I want people to understand the context because
yeah.
it was literally like a 40-yard.
Oh, the context.
Yeah, yeah, pitch shy. And people were like,
yeah, but you still were scooped
it
helping
up.
It up
yeah.
in the air.
So then
like the full chicken
I find
leg.
Myself yeah. completely defending
right.
this is actually a beautifully executed pitch shot.
Right.
And you guys are calling me Sammy Scoops, and then it sort of devolved from there.
Right. And then, like you said, the decel part, when we used to have the putting green, without fail, if anyone kind of like slowed up on a putt,
yeah.
we said, oh, that's a Sam, that's a decel.
Classic there. Lineman.
Yeah, classic lineman. Yeah. It's brutal.
You know, my kids still look up to me.
I know. It's, yeah. it's tough, but you have on here a you're too slow, you're too fast, assorted swing flaws, which obviously that the scoops
yeah,
comes in there.
For sure.
Oh, creative counting was yours too.
Yes.
Which,
yes.
I mean, which let's be clear, you weren't like trying to be
like
cheat here or
yeah.
anything, but you did say you shot a 38, and I was like, I don't want to burst your bubble here, dude, but you didn't shoot
by the
38.
Way, I would
you
say
realized you hadn't counted an entire hole.
By the way, I probably do that. And I've played a lot of golf this summer. I've probably done that 60% of scores I've tabulated.
That's
I mean,
oh
never
God.
Never to the point where I've actually entered
right,
the score.
Right, right, right.
But like at some point, I'm looking like, God, I didn't know I played that well. I
right.
shot 38 here.
But do you not have all the rows filled in? Because wouldn't you notice if you skipped over a hole without
no, no, like in? I literally just something in my head. Again, let's just remember I was an English major in college.
I was going right. to say,
so
you
just,
have the whole floor of English majors.
The basic arithmetic, and for some reason, I just skip over a certain number when I'm adding it up.
Wait, yeah. So how do you add? When you're...
I just do like, you know, four for me. It's like 5, 5, 6, 4.
You should do it
yeah.
off of par. That'll be easier.
I know.
So
I understand
like...
that. I mean, usually that's how I do it.
Right. Once you get to a certain level, Sam, that's when you start. You,
yeah.
do it off par. It's true. Now I'm creeping back towards the level of not doing that.
I know. It's one
but,
over even.
But
yeah.
yeah. But no, but he, you know,
but
he's going through
less...
and he's trying to do it. Quickly for everybody.
That's less math,
yeah.
though, if you're doing it by par, because then you're only
if
counting.
If you play with him, just double-check the scores, for sure. But then I love here, too, you play too much or you play too little.
yeah.
Because
yeah.
here, it can really go both ways.
Yeah, I mean, playing too much, I think we're saying, like, what a life you lead. Like,
right.
obviously, you're not working hard, especially in our place.
Yeah,
like you know,
Steve.
Yeah, we always do hashtag
you know,
must be nice.
Must be nice.
Like,
but then, like, Bone, I'll be like, come
we
on,
were just
yeah. play
about,
a little golf. Like,
yeah.
what's wrong with
we were
you?
Talking to Bone today. He
yeah.
said, he
oh, he
said
he's coming back.
I've
yeah.
got some games
Some games lined
up.
I love, hey, by the way, when you use the term
line.
Games,
yeah.
perfect. But yeah.
Yeah, like, and just to pile on Ryan again, we have this trip to the PGA Tour in a couple weeks, and I said, listen, probably not realistic, but we're supposed to go down. It's a Tuesday meeting, and we're going to fly down Monday night. And I said, this probably won't work, but is it worth considering flying down early on Monday to try to play a good round of golf somewhere?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan rules it out right away. I have too much going on. It was too much work. I mean, so again, so just to, you know, say, like, where are his values? What
where are
his
priorities?
I mean, yeah. you know, God, family, work. I get it. I get it, you know.
I don't get it.
Anyway, it was funny stuff. So.
It's also funny that, like, I feel like normal people who don't work with us are going to read this and be like, oh, this is funny and, like, clever, whatever. And what they don't realize is that, like, all of this is so personal to Sam.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, Sam.
Yeah, and everyone. I mean, we do take shots at people.
Right.
I feel like all of them apply to him, though.
Well, most of them. Well, he wrote it. You're not slow. No, you're not at all.
Yeah.
But, like, there are a lot of, like, kind of generalized, like, references. I'm like, these are all just about Sam. These are all things we've done to him.
Well, the last one is anger issues, choking, and assorted mental deficiencies. So it's basically could be my autobiography title.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The shank at the range.
Oh, the shanks.
So that was the other thing.
Sammy Shanks. You have a lot of...
I've had a lot of issues. Yeah. By the way, I had a recurrence of the shanks recently because I was trying to get some new irons in play, but I had these they were like heavier shafts, and so I was shanking them too much where I'd like literally I don't want to name the manufacturer because I don't want to give them free advertising, but but like 60% of the shots because 60% of the shots I hit were the best irons I've ever hit. Amazing. And then 40% were cold shanks.
That is terrifying. Well,
but when are you getting them fixed?
Well, soon I will. I have to. My point is, the problem is the shaft. It's not the club.
It was heavy.
Heavy. Too heavy for me. I'm
Well, he was used to you had graphite shafts.
Yeah, that's
right. He was the youngest guy to have graphite shafts.
There's nothing wrong with graphite shafts, listeners.
On irons?
Yes. You need them. You're hitting it 210 off the tee. Jesus.
Well, obviously he's using graphite shafts. I mean, graphite shafts on a driver.
Yeah,
on
the tee. I know, but his general length based off of like a 210.
Average iron.
You and I had our
hitting.
You and I had our
clubs about the same.
Yeah, our speed, our clubhead speed, ball speed, exactly the same. So why are you making fun of me?
My smash factor is better than
you. Oh my god.
I'm just making that up. But I feel like I feel like I'm like a half iron longer than you.
What do you hit in an 8 iron?
Like 150.
Oh, you do? Okay, you are.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe 145.
All right, I'm like 140.
Yeah, I feel like I'm like just a touch. I feel like neither of us are embarrassed.
Yeah, but now that Sam's getting... Oh, no, you're going to steel.
Once I get fit for it.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you're going from steel to graphite, now Sam's going to be like longer than you, more accurate.
Wait, why do you say that?
Because that's what happened when I went to graphite.
No, from steel, but he's going the opposite way.
I know he's going the opposite way.
Right.
Yeah, it's going
to...
Wow.
I went to graphite shafts in my 20s. Now that I'm in my 40s, I want to steel shafts.
You're ready. Blades, graphite's gone.
All right, let's get to our guest this week. Sebastian Munoz, fresh off earning his maiden PGA Tour win, was kind enough to join us. Please have a listen to our chat with Sebastian Munoz. All right, I'm excited to welcome to the Golf Digest podcast for the first time, Sebastian Munoz. Sebastian, congratulations on the first win. Thanks for joining us today.
No, thank you so much, and just glad to be here with you guys.
So, you know, let's get right to it. I mean, that was a pretty incredible finish for you. Has it sunk in yet? What you know, winning a PGA Tour event and everything that comes with it, or are you still kind of trying to figure it all out?
Yeah, no, it hasn't sunk in yet. I mean, it's really what everyone says about it. It takes a while. Like this morning, I talked to my girlfriend. I still couldn't believe it. Like yesterday, really happened. All that good stuff, you know, the invitations, Masters, Hawaii. It's just nuts.
Yeah. You mentioned, it's funny you mentioned your girlfriend. There was that video of her kind of going crazy in the background. What did you guys joke about that at all? That was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, it was so cute at the same time, but funny. It's just, I don't know, she's just such an amazing person. I'm blessed to have her by my side, and you know, kind of we've been in this process, I mean, of pro golf like for 4 years, and where we started and where we are, it's just amazing.
So obviously, you know, this wasn't your first time contending. You finished third at the Greenbrier when you were a rookie. But obviously, you know, just to show how the difference between a win and a third, how big it is. Obviously, you finished third then, but you lost your card. Xander Schauffele won that week. We know what he's gone on to do. So the margins are so thin. Were you at all worried that you weren't going to be able to get over the top this time as the 54-hole leader?
I mean, definitely that. I mean, like having the experience at the Greenbrier definitely helped a lot. Like knowing that how I'm going to feel, like a little more anxiety and a little more concerned about hitting the shots and all of that. But that helped me a lot. And, you know, having Carlos there as well kind of gave me a little extra confidence in the start and just kind of trust my stuff and believe that I was good enough to do it. And, you know, like coming on 15, 16, 17, like I thought it was just slipping away. I thought I had it in my hands and it was just slipping. I couldn't do anything about it. And me and my caddy were just like, you know, it's one more, there's one more, you know, there's, they're holding on to us. Like there's one more coming, and it came in a big way on 18.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's not an easy hole there. And you hit it to 14 feet, you convert the putt. How much did that putt feel different than any other putt that you had faced before in your career, or did you kind of treat it as a normal putt?
I don't know. For last whole putts, like I try less hard. whatever's gonna happen is gonna happen. Like I'm just gonna strike it and see if it goes in. But like I'm just trying to like relax my body to the max. And like for the putt I hit to win in Bogota. 2016 in the Corn Ferry now. Mm-hmm. Like it's just kind of like the same sensations, just let it go, just like, yeah, like I tried less hard for the winning putt.
Yeah, sure. You know, you mentioned playing with Carlos. I read somewhere where, you know, his success on the web, now Corn Ferry, was kind of the motivation maybe for you to even keep on going. What was that like? How funny was that you happened to be paired with him in the final group, and how comfortable of a pairing was that for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's just insane. Like, you know, like if he didn't have the success he had right out of college, I have no idea where I would be. You know, like I probably wouldn't be playing golf right now. So that's a funny thing. And having him in the final pairing, I mean, it was his final pairing, so I can tell he was a little nervous, he was a little extra talkative, he was a little slower than usual, but, it's normal. I mean, it's his first time in that situation, and yeah, having him there, you know, it felt comfortable. Like, I didn't feel, like, bursty jitters or anything. Like, I was just ready to go, and it just happened that putts were not falling in. I mean, Sunday's just different day, so... I was just at the end blessed that it all came out on my way.
Now you guys overlapped at North Texas, right? Was
correct.
Yeah. So what? I mean, that's pretty impressive, a program to have two guys who are in the final pairing at a PGA Tour event. And also, I know that Kyle Berkshire, the World Long Drive champ, also went there. I don't know did you overlap with him too?
No, the first year after I graduated, he came in. So
okay, so you just missed him.
I barely missed him.
Gotcha. But yeah, so I mean, you know, it's pretty impressive for the green. What is it? The big green.
The mean green.
The mean green. My bad. The mean green. Yeah, it's pretty pretty impressive for that program.
Yeah, I mean, definitely Coach Trek. He makes a great job of recruiting. Like he definitely looks for different factors, you know, than the other head coaches, I think, and you know, like it worked really good for him to having us all on the team at the same time. I mean, we're in different parts of our lives, so probably the team success was not as good as, you know, the roster should have been. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like the talent we had, we didn't perform at all, but it's just part of the process, and you know, like we're here now, so it doesn't really matter.
Sure. Well, what has it meant to get, you know, congratulations on Twitter from guys like Justin Thomas reaching out and, you know, superstars like that? And I'm sure you've gotten a million messages from other people. What has that been like for you? And is there anybody who reached out that you were surprised to hear from?
Yeah, like, I mean, like I haven't really reached Twitter yet. I barely just passed text messages and WhatsApp. I still gotta go through Instagram and no Twitter and then Facebook. Like it's just the amount of messages is just unreal. But you know, just really grateful. Like a lot of like heavy political guys in Colombia. You know, like heavy guys that, you know, like I knew before, but they didn't have my cell phone. They reached out and that was kind of special. But but yeah, I mean, just nice, great feeling, and wow.
Sure. Now, obviously, I mean, you were coming off a week where you finished T7 the week before, so you're obviously playing really well right now. I know you're going to play this week as well at the Safeway. What's been going so well? I mean, it looks like you're third in strokes gained tee to green on tour. You're sixth in approach. Is it the ball striking, or is it anything else that's really leading you right now?
Yeah, I mean, the ball striking definitely has helped a lot. I feel like, I mean, we're still two tournaments in, so like,
right.
It might be a little biased, but but yeah, I mean, I felt good with my swing. I felt confident, and you know, just living through what I passed last season, that was getting my card on the 124 number.
Right.
I mean, that was a high pressure situation, like huge, and just kind of realizing that I don't have to think about reshuffle, that I don't have to worry about, you know, like trying to get every extra point to get more starts
right.
out of the Korn Ferry category. It's really a relief, and I think that just kind of clicked in my head and being a little more free and kind of giving a little extra, you know, risking a little more mm-hmm. and trusting it a little more, and that paid off.
Yeah, you mentioned 124 on the money list last year, on the FedEx Cup list. I know you had to make the cut there at the Wyndham in the last regular season event. Explain to people, you know, what kind of pressure is that like? And I think you finished T48, but that ended up being just what you needed to get by.
Yeah, I mean, that week was just stressful. I feel like you feel more pressure fighting for your card than trying to win a tournament.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's your livelihood, you know? It's, like, things that you strive the most. I mean, I've been on tour once, and I lost my card once, and then I had to go back to the Korn Ferry and get the 25 and get back on top and then
right.
fight off the guys in my category to try to get more starts, which I did that past year and managed to get my card. So it's just really high stress. I mean, you don't know where your life's going to be the next year. And I mean, well, I had that 126, 150 category, which turns out to be this year was really good. But
right.
last year, it sucked.
Right.
Last year, those guys didn't get a lot of starts.
Didn't
so
get, right.
you don't really know what you have. So that insecurity, that uncertainty is just tough to deal with. And man, you know, you just want it so bad and you can't force results. So it's... I mean, I played with Robert Strev and Alex Noren, and man, I mean, really good players, but dude, I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Is there something that stands out, obviously besides the money and everything else, a perk that really stands out for you being on the PGA Tour versus the Korn Ferry, something that you're like, wow, man, I love being able to do this every week at a tour event, where if you were still in the Korn Ferry, if you had to go back, you wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest part of it is just kind of maintaining my team, you know, mm-hmm. like being out here in tour, we have a little more money. So, I mean, I can find my girl wherever I want, and, you know,
right.
my coach can come in for lessons, and, you know, like I can pay my caddy good enough money for him to stay in the bag. Like,
right.
whenever you're at the Korn Ferry, like, you know, purses are smaller. I mean, a lot smaller. So, I mean, you don't have that amount of money to, you know, use the people that you need to be successful. So I think that's the perk that I like the most.
Sure. What? How did you celebrate on Sunday night?
Oh, I was staying at some friend's house, and we just had some burgers, a couple beers, you know, a couple shots here and there. And we just hang out, tell stories about the day, just couldn't believe what happened, just, you know, had a great time.
Any plans to treat yourself to something with that winner's check?
Not really. I mean, probably I'll get myself a little gift or something. Like, maybe I'll go on a nice vacation.
Okay. Okay.
Once the off time comes around.
Right.
But no, nothing that I'm thinking about right now. I just got to treat my friends to a nice dinner, maybe Tuesday or Wednesday. That's the first thing on the list.
Mm-hmm.
A nice steak dinner, maybe, and that's it.
Very nice. What is this, you know, obviously you mentioned being able to get all the starts you want and everything. How will your schedule change now going forward? Again, I know you're playing this week. You want to kind of ride the hot hand, I guess. But will you change up your schedule now?
I have no clue, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the first time I'm going to be able to actually pick my schedule.
Right.
Ever, basically. So it's just I'm going to talk to my coach, Troy Dannon, and, you know, like he also helps out Ryan Moore, so I'll kind of meet with him like for dinner or something. We'll talk about it and kind of see what has worked with him, and, you know, kind of give it a feel. I mean, I there's a lot of events I haven't played on tour, even though this is my third year
right.
that I want to play. So I still think I'm going to play a lot of events, but yeah, I mean, just exciting.
What? How about your goals? Has anything changed now that you're a tour winner? Do you kind of elevate your goals, or does everything stay the same?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I'm supposed to. Like, I mean, one of the goals was winning, so
right.
I got that one. So now what? I mean, I need to be chasing a new goal, like maybe win again, probably.
Sure. Yeah, and your timing, you know, obviously you talk about the exemption, you get that 2-year exemption, but your timing is so great. It's almost like a 3-year exemption because
it's a 3-year. Yeah, it's sweet.
Yeah.
So sweet.
And very sweet. Obviously, you mentioned the Masters invite as well. Have you started to think about that at all? I know that's many months off, but have you started to think about going to Augusta?
Well, yeah, I just don't know what are the rules. I was talking to my coach earlier today, and like he doesn't know either. So we need to talk to someone to know when can we go, and kind of get my practice rounds
right.
in. You know, like kind of bring a guest. How does it work? So I'm just really excited for that new thing in life.
Right. On your PGA Tour profile, it says that you were a very accomplished volleyball and disc thrower. Is disc throwing like golf or frisbee, or what was that?
No, that was like in the athletic department of my high school.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, being a golfer, I was pretty used to turn my body hard, so I just disc throw, like, you know, the Olympics.
Oh, like the discus.
Yeah. Discus.
Yeah. Okay. So you could toss it. Oh, okay. I see.
Well, I mean, I used to. I haven't done it in 10 years, but. But yeah, I used to toss it pretty good.
And volleyball player, huh?
I mean, it's just a fun sport, you know. I didn't really want to get into like soccer, like it's just too many like knee injuries, so I just went with volleyball.
Sure. And I know you were very open afterwards about how much this means as a Latin American golfer, obviously coming off last week where Joaquin Niemann wins as well. It's the first time we've had back-to-back golfers from Latin America win on the PGA Tour. How special is this time for that, and is it something that you couldn't have even imagined happening?
Yeah, like to be honest, like I thought 5 weeks in perspective, like I would have thought like last week I would have had a better chance of winning, you know, like
mm-hmm.
but things just coincide. Like I was talking to Joaquin on the charter on the way to Jackson, and I was just asking, hey man, how does it feel, you know, having 2-3 years of not having to think about job security or like, you know, just like stuff like that. And he was just like speechless, and it's just magical how it just happened to me, like instant. So I mean, we're right in a hot hand, Latin America. I feel like we know that what we're capable of, and you know, like it's just a lot of young players trying to come out, so you just gotta keep going.
Sure. And I know you get to take home that Rooster Trophy, which everybody loves
yeah,
talking
really.
About.
Yeah.
Where is that right now? Are you holding on? Are you chipping it, or what are you
no,
doing?
No. I left it at Jackson.
Okay.
It's way too heavy.
Oh, really? It's heavy.
It's really heavy. Like, yeah, like for the pictures, after 10 minutes, my arms were jiggling, like twitching. Yeah, it's really heavy, but. But yeah, they'll send me like a smaller version to my house once everything settled down.
Very good. I'm sure you have a spot picked out to keep that hanging there, showing it off.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Great. Well, Sebastian, thank you so much for taking the time. Congratulations on the win and everything else that comes with it. And good luck the rest of the season, the rest of the fall season. Hope to see you out there at some point.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. And this was nice. It was a pleasure.
You got it, Sebastian. Take care, man.
All right. Have a good one. Bye.
Congrats again, and thanks again to Sebastian Munoz for joining us. Okay, as always, let's end with some awards. We'll start with the best one-day story. That goes to Tony Romo. Tony Romo is going to play in the Safeway Open taking another sponsor's invite. It's going to be his fourth PGA Tour appearance. Tony
That's
Romo.
Insane.
He's racking up the PGA Tour appearances. It's almost as many as Tiger played this year. That's a lot. Anyway, the big deal is he's got a big game on Sunday, Bears Vikings, to cover. And last year, apparently, his bosses at CBS said, no, you can't play. I don't know if it was this event or another event. They said, no, you can't do that. You can't miss the game. This year, they said, go ahead, play in the tournament. Now, of course, if he misses the cut, which
that's what I was gonna say.
Will, 99.9%. He will be able to make it to game prep on Saturday for the game on Sunday. I'm sure he could even coast in on Sunday and be totally fine. But anyway, for two things. This basically, we're just saying it's not a big deal because he's not going to make a cut. But B, at what point does he reach the limit of kind of maxing out the sponsor?
Well, we've had this
right.
this part of the discussion.
Yeah, but we've
times.
Never had a guy do it this many times.
No, I agree. John Smoltz, right.
Mm-hmm.
So are you talking about, is Tony Romo, is it apparent? Listen, you're taking up a spot. So again,
yeah.
So there's that part of it, right? It's the discretion of the tournament organizer to decide, well, Tony Romo adds an element of interest to the tournament.
Sure.
We want to give him a chance. I don't begrudge the tournament for offering him that opportunity. I will say they now have a body of work to look at
right.
and say it's probably not going to end
right.
that well.
I think his best score is a 76.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So that's the first part. And then now if you're Tony Romo, at what point do you say, okay, listen, I'm out of my league here. This is not the best use of my time in terms of trying to become a – I mean, he's obviously an elite level.
Right.
Compared to, 99% of the world, he's a very good golfer. But I think, you're a professional athlete. You're a competitive animal. They have a different mindset than most of us. And I feel like he probably knows in his heart that – every time he's put himself in that arena, he's underperformed by his standards, and he's got something left to give. He's got
mm-hmm.
another level that he hasn't reached, which I can appreciate. So I don't begrudge him for taking the opportunity at all. I mean, obviously, as it relates to his job and all that, that's a whole other thing. I know these guys work hard, like on the broadcasting side. They have to prepare. They are obviously show up for meetings and
yep.
and pre-interviews and all that. So I know there's a process involved that involves more than showing up and talking to a mic like we're doing today. We want to make sure that you're honoring that side of the equation as well.
Well, it's just interesting because Stephen Curry, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, was offered the same sponsor invite and he didn't take it. He's just going to play in the Pro-Am with Phil Mickelson. So he's still going to get to go play with Phil. I mean, it's totally different, obviously.
Totally different.
And he did play in Korn Ferry tour event, last year. So he's done it, but maybe he already, I did it. Let's not do it. And this event also last year gave it to Mark Mulder, who the former pitcher, who's on the same level as Tony Romo. He won the America Century 3 years in a row. Now Romo's one of the last two. He actually was under par through 14 holes last year and then kind of spit the bit. But my point is he had a connection to the Oakland area and
yeah.
the Napa area. Romo doesn't really have that connection. That's a little weird to me.
Yeah,
but
I think Sam's theory that there's, having something to prove. I think that's
yeah.
that's the motivation. I'm not surprised that Steph Curry would say no to it because he's still a competitive athlete in his primary sport. I think it's really hard to, leave a sport and then just kind of have no real competitive outlet anymore. And I think that Tony Romo sees that he has this really unique opportunity to stay
right.
supremely competitive. Why not take advantage of it if it keeps getting offered to you?
Yeah, well, we'll have to see what happens. CBS says they have a contingency plan. If he does miss the game, they won't say who is filling in. I'd like to see it happen just to see who's filling in for Tony.
Right.
Sitting next to our buddy, Jim Nance.
That's right.
In the booth.
Maybe it's
but,
you.
But we'll see. It could be. I've been sworn to
secrecy. If you're
going
with Nance, Nance would make you look good.
He could. He's so smooth. He's the GOAT. All right, moving on. This week, and pros are just like us, and I'm starting to go away from that and go to more pros are not just like the us. And it goes to Pat Perez, who went to Vegas on a little trip last weekend and had a nice 10 grand dinner at MGM Grand Craft Steak, which obviously is a very fancy steakhouse. And it was for four people. It wasn't for a big group of people either. It was 10,000. You figure 20% tip. At least Pat's a great, nice, I'm sure he's a big tipper. Let's say 30% tip. That's $13,000 for a dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, that's right in your wheelhouse.
$13,000 for dinner? The
yeah.
only time I did that was my wedding, but that was for
exactly.
hundreds of people.
Exactly. 100 people, right.
Yeah. We're still paying for that probably. What jumped out at me, Keely, was a $4,000 bottle of wine.
Ooh.
And then there was some four other bottles of wine that were only $1,000 each. So they were having a good time.
That's so interesting. How how different do you think wine tastes? I'm not a wine guy, but in the thousands of dollar range.
I can't even imagine. Like, there's no way it's that much better.
Life-changing?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that's crazy. All right. Our stat of the week. For the first time, we kind of touched on it before, but for the first time since 2008, we have two non-Americans winning the first two events of a PGA Tour season. 2008, you will literally never get it, ever. Because the guy who won at Kapalua, I can't believe he was even in Kapalua, and it's because he had just won his only other tournament. You'll never get it. I'll just
give me a hint, another hint.
I can't. The initials DC.
Darren Clark.
Close. Because it's DC. You got the right initials. Daniel Chopra.
Yeah, no. Wow.
Daniel
Sweden.
Chopra,
the
and then KJ Choi won the Sony the next week. So that's it. So pretty unusual. And obviously, like we mentioned before, the first time it's ever been two players from Latin America. All right, finally, we have the Safeway this week. I assume none of us are picking Tony Romo, though he is in the field,
sorry,
as we
Tony.
Mentioned. Keely, I'll start with you. Any thoughts on...
yeah.
Who you like this week in the third event of the season? We're going to have to see. Can U.S. golf get back on the board here? I mean, we're really struggling. Solheim, this.
We are getting shut
We're getting
out.
Killed.
Wow.
Getting killed right
I didn't
now.
Even really think yeah. about that, but now you say it. This has been a really
the
tough...
death of American golf. We're witnessing
well,
it.
Nelly Korda.
Nelly.
Team on her back. But that was an LET.
LET event.
It wasn't LPGA.
Yeah.
Patrick Cantlay, 11-1. I love it.
Okay.
Bang.
He's right up there near the top. Patrick Cantlay. Sam?
I'm going to go Sung J M. I feel like he's
I
due.
I was looking at
25
him.
To 1. I mean, that's might even be too low. Or too, whatever.
Odds are good. Yeah. Odds are good. I'm going to actually give three names.
Jesus.
I'm cheating. Two guys, but I'm going down the board. Two guys at 40-1. Both have prior runner-up finishes here.
You're
Kevin Na and Ryan Moore.
You didn't pick Morikawa?
No, I'm not. He's 33-1. It was tempting. I wanted to go a little further down.
Okay.
And then how about Phil Mickelson at 50-1? I don't know. He's had T8, T3, T17 the past 3 years here. This is an event that he loves to go to, apparently, all of a sudden. And, you know, if he's going to have the good vibes with Steph Curry in the Pro-Am. We got Tom Brady being jealous of his Cavs. He's managed to stay in the news despite not playing for a while. And look what he did at the beginning of this past year when when he's fresh, he can come out and really play well. So
good point.
50-1.
That's
50-1.
For sure.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I like that.
Anyway, all right, guys, it was fun as always. Thanks for joining me. Thanks again to Sebastian Munoz for joining us. Thanks to our producer, as always, Greg Gottfried. Thanks to our listeners for checking in. And please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already. And check back next week to see who our guest is.